All right, guys, I would like you to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 5. The Gospel of Mark chapter 5. We're going to continue today with the story that we were looking at last week. Remember, there was a synagogue ruler. He asked Jesus to come and help him with his daughter, who is having some real issues, and Jesus says, yes, I'll go. And then on his way to go, a woman touches him who has had an issue of blood for 12 years and so, and Jesus pauses and wants to know who touched him, and we talked about that all last week. Well, now we're going to get back to the young ruler today. And I was thinking about this morning as I was reflecting on this message and thinking about this story. We know the story. We've been taught the story. All the Gospels speak of this story. That is, the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it's really easy for us to just read through it and then really not grasp what's going on here. And as I was reading it this morning, and as I was thinking about it, I realized that sometimes what I need to do and what you need to do is slow down for a moment and consider what's happening here. So what are we going to consider, George? Well, we're going to consider, we're talking about a dad. He has a position in the community. And his daughter is sick and hurting. And when you're a dad or a mom, and your little one is hurting, I think we can relate, right? I think about my kids. I would do anything for my kids. Do you understand? So like my youngest, Hudson, went to some function down in Virginia, down near the North Carolina border. And so I am a nervous kind of guy with my kids. So I'm like, can you share your location with me? Dad only wants to see you where you are on this trip. When we're done, you can take me off. You don't need to worry about his dad creeping on me. You know, I just want to see that you got there. So, and then he drove home last night. Through the night, up from southwest Virginia all the way up to getting back home to where he lives in West Decatur. And I'm just nervous for my kids. You guys are like that. You know what I'm saying? This dad is like that. And I can't even imagine what he was feeling because he's got Jesus' attention. And Jesus said, okay, I'll go with you. And then as they're going, I can see the excitement welling up in his heart. The text doesn't tell us that. But then there's this interruption. Jesus is focused on somebody else. I mean, I would be, you would say, oh, a spiritual guy who's the ruler of the synagogue, he should be thankful that this lady is being healed. No, I'm thinking my child is hurting. But it is the teacher, so you just suck it up, right? But then he gets devastating news. And that's where I think we can relate. What do you mean? Well, let's look at the passage together. Okay, so we're going to look at verses 35 through 43. I want you to notice what Mark records. Now, while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear. Only believe. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw the commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when they had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, but he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumai," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Now, you've heard this before, but I want us to think about it, okay? I want us to enter into the pain. And I don't think that's going to be hard for us, okay? I don't think it's going to be hard for us to read the passage and enter into pain, because the fact of the matter is he gets some devastating news. You and I have gotten devastating news before. I think we can understand, especially when it's somebody you love. And so what I want to do is I want to go through this passage, and there's about four sections, and we're going to take them one section at a time, and we're going to build to a point here, okay? And what we're doing when we're building to the point is we're going to understand ourselves as we understand this ruler, and we're definitely going to understand Jesus. And let me just say this. For some of you, you need to understand Jesus. Just being honest with you. Because when stuff goes wrong, especially when you get devastating news, you don't understand him. You question him. You go through bouts of unbelief. You struggle. And it's like you're trying to make sense of it. And we're going to see he's the one who comes along and says, "Do not fear." Because I'll be honest with you, fear is big. Fear dominates us. Fear drives us. Fear is our natural response. So let's take a look at this. First of all, if you look at verse 35, it's devastating news. Look at what he says here in the passage. While he was still speaking, that's speaking of Jesus as he was addressing the woman, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" That's just devastating. Some of you can relate. You've had a loved one who died. You weren't there with them when they passed away. But then maybe you came later and somebody met you and they said to you, "Your loved one's dead." You don't forget those moments. Do you know what I'm saying? You don't forget it. So for me, September of 1986, just a college kid, working at a Burger King, by the manager comes and says to me, "George, you need to go home." Now, that's just kind of an odd request because where I'm in a different county. If you understand Columbia, it's the city. I'm in a different, completely, I'm in Lexington County, which is to the west, a whole county away from where my mom lived and my dad lived. And so I had to get in my car and drive all the way across the county. And I remember walking through the front door and my mom meeting me, crying. And she said, "Your daddy's dead." That's just devastating. I think that's with death. We get other news that's devastating sometimes, right? This is the reality. So what I'm saying, few things are as crushing as the news of a tragedy. It crushes us. and you're never the same. We have to admit that. Something changed in us that moment when we got that news. So like my mother, she messaged me this week, and she was telling me that my German grandmother, which would be her mother, I call her Oma. Oma is the German word for grandmother. Would have been 106 this last week. And she died at 93. I was glad my mom sent me the text, but I also wasn't. Because I love my grandmother. I loved Uma. But they're gone. And you change. You change. And there's nothing as tragic as hearing the news of someone being lost, you know? Here's the other thing I want you to see from this. The consensus tells you to quit bothering God. The consensus tells you to quit bothering God, because here's what happens. They come and they say, hey, your daughter's dead. Next thing out of their mouth is, don't bother to teach her. Now, who's the teacher? Jesus, right? Jesus, who does amazing things. Jesus, whose news of him is spread out all throughout the entire area. Jesus, who can do anything. And they're like, don't bother the teacher anymore. She's dead. Kind of like a finality to it. And that's what the consensus is. The consensus is like when it finally ends, no matter what you're facing, or it just seems like the end to us, people just say, well, there's no sense praying anymore. No sense talking to God. No sense bringing that before him anymore. Time to move on. It's time to move on. You say, really? People say things like that. I'm amazed that sometimes our words of comfort do not bring comfort. Do you understand what I'm saying? Sometimes the things we say to comfort each other aren't really words of comfort. Especially when you're devastated. But what I want you to see in this passage is something amazing, because that's verse 35. Look at verse 36. Remember I told you Jesus is aware of everything? We'll go with verse 36 says, okay? Verse 36, but overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear, only believe. So he heard the discussion, okay? He heard what was going on. He heard what the ruler was being told. He heard, and he says, don't be afraid. Believe. And so here, 2 points I want to bring out here. Here it is. There is no finality with the Lord. Some of you have got to realize that. There's no finality with him. There is for us, but there isn't with the Lord. Just receiving the news that she was dead, that's not going to stop Jesus. You know that. In fact, he would show that in the Gospel of John when he heard that his friend Lazarus was dead and it took him several days to get there. He's 3 days in the grave. That didn't stop Jesus, did it? He could raise him from the dead. There's no finality with the Lord. Sometimes you need to remember that, because you might be going through something right now. You might be devastated by what you're facing and what you're enduring. And you're like, okay, there's no sense in me praying anymore. There's nothing more I can do for it. It's completely out of my hands. It's gone. There's nothing that can be done. Really? That might be true for you. That might be true for any other human being. But that isn't true for God. There's no finality with him. Second thing I want you to see here. Jesus tells him not to be afraid, but to believe. Believe. Believe what, George? Believe that God is in control. Believe. In fact, that is the emphasis of the New Testament. Listen to what Paul says. Paul says this in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6 and 7. He says, "Do not be anxious for anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Don't be anxious. What's anxious? Fear. Fear. Keep going to him. Trust him. Trust him. But see, there's a problem. The problem is, okay, you got the devastating news. This young ruler got the devastating news about his daughter. He's told not to bother the teacher anymore. Teacher says, whoa, wait a minute. Trust. Just go, let's go. But the problem is we live in a world with people who don't believe. So here's what I want you to notice. I want you to notice with me the unbelief. Look with me at verse 38 and 39. Let me help you to understand what's going on here. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when they had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." Now, let me explain to you their culture. Their culture is a lot different than our culture. All of us attend funerals at some point. It's just part of life, right? We go to the funeral home, do visitation for our loved ones or friends or some family member, maybe extended. And there might be tears, but they're quiet tears. If somebody was wailing out loud, that would be unusual to us. And we would say, "Are they okay? What, there's something going on right there?" You know, because that culturally is not appropriate to us. We grieve quietly. We would say, "Go home and grieve like that." You know. Now that's not true with. In fact, it's not true in the Middle East today. It wasn't true back then in the Israeli culture. You would mourn out loud. People would be wailing out loud. In fact, in their day, in Jesus' day, the more people you had show up wailing, that signified how important you were to the community. And so in their day, they had professional, are you ready for this? Professional wailers. People who would be paid by the family to come and mourn and grieve. And so here they are. Of course, it's one of the rulers of the synagogue, so that's a man of significance in the village, and his daughter is dead. And so there are people there, some who are grieving probably out of the reality of their heart for the family, but there are others there who are grieving because we need to show that he's an important guy. And they're all like, they're screaming and wailing and mourning. And here's Jesus. Jesus shows up, and here's what he does. He questions the emotional response. He questions, why are they acting this way? Isn't that interesting? Because you could say, well, Jesus, they're mourning. Of course they would be mourning. God doesn't see things that way. Because really, what it's expressing is there's no hope. This is the it. There's no hope. This is the end of it. This little girl, 12 years old, is gone. And he questions that. In fact, he tells them, what does he tell them? She's not dead. She's asleep. And what do they do? They laugh at him. In fact, that's my next point. Unbelief laughs at the possibility that God could do something. Ever had somebody tell you that? Going through something, you're facing a devastating thing, and you say to somebody, I'm just trusting God to get us through this. And some people, especially an unbeliever, will say, yeah, but he ain't going to do anything for you. Seriously, you need to wake up and do something. That God's not going to do it for you. Why didn't he do something earlier? Unbelievers laugh at the possibility of God doing something. This is what we see. We see this in this picture. And I, to be honest with you, when I'm listening, reading this, I just feel for the dad. He's already dealing with the devastating news that his daughter is dead. He's got the teacher on one hand, Jesus on the one hand, saying, just believe, it's okay, don't be afraid. And then he's got other people like, are you kidding me? Come on, that isn't going to happen. But I want you to see Jesus. I want you to see the hand of God. I want you to see his hand in this. And I want us to understand, okay? So I want you to notice with me, let's look at these few verses together. Look with me at verse 41 and 43. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumai, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately, the girl got up and began walking, and she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and he told them to give her something to eat. Well, that's pretty explanatory, George. What do you mean you got to point something out to us here? Well, yeah. Again, remember, our tendency is to just kind of blow by things. Here's what I want you to see. A couple points here. First of all, Jesus can do anything. Remember what the ruler was told about, don't bother the teacher anymore, it's over. Don't bother him. I know he was coming, but he got interrupted, and don't bother him. It's over. I'm telling you, Jesus is saying, I can do anything. I can do anything. Why? Because he's God. He goes and speaks Aramaic to her, telling her, get up. Get up. And she did. He could do anything. Why did we forget that? I don't know. It's just human for us, right? And he's saying to us, just like what he said to that guy before he went to that house, do not be afraid. Just believe. Don't be afraid. Jesus can do anything. And then what follows is, it always amazes me. I used to think, why in the world is he telling them this? He did it once before. Remember, he healed the blind man, or he healed a leper, and he would say to them, don't tell anybody. Really? Really? How are they supposed to not tell anybody, especially if somebody knew they were blind, right? I mean, how did that happen? I don't know. Seriously, what? I mean, come on. Or you got a leper who's like unclean, and he's got body parts, whatever, and he's got skin disease or whatever, and Jesus heals him. Don't tell anybody. Go show yourself to the priest. Like, well, what's going on here? Here we have a situation where, by the way, let's remind ourselves of something. How many people do you think know the girl's dead? Pretty big amount, because why? The mourners were there. They know she was dead. In fact, they were mocking Jesus. What do you mean you got her? She's dead. They knew. And then Jesus says to them, don't tell anybody. What in the world is he telling them? Here's the point. It kind of came home to me this week. Here it is. Let the facts concerning the Lord's work speak for themselves. You don't need to go around broadcasting it. All you got to do is say, wow, she was dead. And she met Jesus. Enough said. Sometimes we don't need to advertise. He doesn't need us. Can I say that? He doesn't need you to broadcast that he could do anything. Your life testifies to that. Your life communicates the reality of that, of how he answered you and he blessed you and he did this for you. And others see it. Because here's the thing, they didn't need to say anything because I can almost guarantee you that 12-year-old girl, she was only a few years away from being marriageable, just being honest with you. She probably would have been married in another 3-4 years. As long as that woman lived, the people would say in that community, she was dead, but she came back because of Jesus. There's no way. Nobody needed, it was just obvious. The parents didn't need to say anything. They just needed to enjoy what God did for them. You say, okay, George, what do we do with this? Why is this significant to us? Okay? Well, here's what I want you and I to consider, okay? Here's what I want you and I to wrestle with, okay? Because here's the thing. If you've been alive for a while, you know devastating things happen. Sometimes they're out of our hands. Sometimes we create them for ourselves. And let us be honest. We're afraid of those times. We want to say, no, that's never happened to me, but they do happen. And then we're like, how do I get out of this? What do I do? But I'll tell you what we always do. We forget the one who tells us not to be afraid. The one who tells us, don't fear, just believe. And we even argue with him. We'll even say to him, well, you know, I get that, Jesus. I get that, Lord. You don't want me to be afraid, believe. But I'm going to tell you right now, I have a hard time believing. I'm having a hard time figuring out how this is going to get better than what it already is. By the way, who told you you had to figure it out? Because there's some things we can't figure out, right? But let's trust the one who can do anything, right? Who already has it figured out. Who wants to be there for us. So when we're in the midst of it and when we get the devastating news, what we should be doing is the thing that we want to avoid, but the thing that we should be doing is go to him and pour out your heart. And like Philippians says, and the peace of God which surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So I told you about the devastating news I got back in September of 1986. almost 40 years ago, what I didn't tell you was is for the next week, the whole next week after the funeral and my dad being buried in the National Cemetery over in Florence, South Carolina, and the military stuff, and for the next week, I have vivid memories of me being up in, I lived in a ministry house a block away from the University of South Carolina, and I remember being up in the attic where I lived and just weeping beside my bed, just trying to figure out, God, why? You know, I was praying for my dad, and my dad was 41 when he was murdered, and I was like, why? And I remember days just crying out to God until the peace came. And when the peace came, he didn't give me answers. He didn't give me answers. George, this is why this had to happen. George, this is what taking. He didn't give me answers. But I'm telling you, after days of praying before him about that and weeping and trying to understand and seeking God's face, I had an overwhelming sense of peace to the point I never prayed about it again after that. But I knew that my God was alive. He gave me peace. See, I think what we need to be doing is quit giving up. It just seems to be the natural response. I do it, you do it. It's like when something happens and it just seems so out of our control, for some reason, at some point we say, okay, that's it, I'm done. There's nothing I can do. We'll move on, I'll just live with it. And we give up. Can I tell you what we're giving up on? We give up on trusting God. We give up on Him. And what He says to us is what Jesus said to that young ruler. Don't fear. Don't be afraid. Just believe. And I'm not just talking about believing facts. Belief there is communicating trust. Trust. Just trust me. I know you don't know what the road lies ahead of you, but trust me. And that's what we need to do. We need to trust Him. And I can testify through many other devastating experiences, you and I can trust Him. Let me pray for you.